Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It is the first day of spring, March the 21st, 2007. Let's trust that we get better weather this spring. Let's trust that we have better political developments than what we've been seeing in the news in recent days. And I trust that your spring and mine will be a blessed time for family members and friends as we move toward a time when kids will be getting out of school. Hopefully the weather, both physically and politically, will be more congenial, and maybe we'll have some opportunities in the spring and early summer to have some time for family members and friends and church gatherings and things of that sort, where we occasionally escape from some of the dreadful information that seems to be going on in the world and being disseminated throughout the world right now. But nonetheless, it is the first day of spring, March of 2007. We're going to have a very special guest at 8 o'clock this morning, Mehdi Amini. He represents a group called United Republicans of Iran for a Democratic and Secular Republic. You can find the English language version of his website at iranrepublic.org. What is the United Republicans of Iran organization? You know, I have to confess that I know very little about it. That's the reason I'm having this gentleman on this morning, is to find out more about it and who's involved in it, what's behind it, what it seeks for the future of Iran. And given the fact that Iran is such an important geopolitical and geostrategic place in regard to where the United States foreign policy is at the present time, it behooves us to learn more about some of these Iranian expatriate organizations across the political spectrum so that we can evaluate exactly what's happening in that country and evaluate some of the various organizations, left, right, and center, who are involved in that circumstance. So we'll be talking with him at 8 o'clock this morning. That's Mehdi Amini of the United Republicans of Iran for a Democratic and Secular Republic. And you can find his website again at iranrepublic.org. You know, we have all kinds of things to talk about in the news today. Yahoo reports that bombings have tripled in Afghanistan in 2006. Gary Camilla for Salon has a very important article entitled, "Can American Jews Unplug the Israel Lobby?" The Daily Star of Lebanon, following up on an earlier Iran press service report that we talked about yesterday with Meir Javadanfar, the Daily Star of Lebanon is now reporting that Moscow has denied giving Tehran a nuclear ultimatum. We might take a look at that story in the next hour before our guest comes on. The Washington Post had a front-page piece yesterday entitled, "Police Yield to Sunni Insurgents' Ultimatum." That front-page story yesterday in the Washington Post suggests that there's a lot that's not going very well for our so-called surge policy in Iraq as it relates to dealing with a struggle between Sunnis and Shiites and dealing with a couple of Shiite factions as well in regard to trying to pacify that region. Again, that's the Washington Post from yesterday, "Police Yield to Sunni Insurgents' Ultimatum." Philip Giraldi, who writes for Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative, has a very, very interesting piece today at antiwar.com entitled, "Picking on Halliburton." Philip Giraldi, of course, is an inside guy. He has a past in the Central Intelligence Agency. He's been a consultant for something called Canestraro Associates. And, of course, he is an ongoing so-called deep cover correspondent for Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative. Well worth taking a look at his piece today at antiwar.com entitled "Picking on Halliburton," because it will augment some of the information that has recently come out of the New York Times on the whole subject of Halliburton transferring its base of operations from Houston to Dubai. We will be back with what may be the most important story today, and that is the situation with Dr. Sami Al-Aryan, which was reported today at aljazeera.info. We'll take a look at that one, too, when we come back. This is Mark Dankoff from America coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. Stay tuned.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
The Republic Broadcasting Network is very proud to present a new educational tool that will inform and update our listeners to the most critically important topics and issues of the day. This new 50 CD collection contains invaluable information, carefully selected from the very best shows in the RBN archives. These standard format CDs have been painstakingly edited to remove all commercials and unrelated topic content. Each CD has been divided into multiple tracks for ease of use and review in any standard CD player. Each CD targets a specific subject matter. For example, Agenda 21, vaccinations, 9/11, depleted uranium, the war in Iraq, fluoride, deception in the churches, genetically modified foods, animal RFID tags, and many more topics. We encourage you to make copies and get them out to as many people as you can. Call and order your library CDs for the price of $150, 800-724-2719, or go to the website rbnlive.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Mark and Us America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be joined at 8 o'clock this morning by Mehdi Amini of the United Republicans of Iran for a Democratic and Secular Republic. You can find the English language website of that organization at iranrepublic.org. And I know very little about this organization, which is precisely why I want to talk to this individual. And to gain some exposure for that organization with a wider audience so that we might evaluate exactly what this is and who's behind it and what they envision for that part of the world. So it will be a joint learning experience, I trust, at 8 o'clock this morning Central Standard Time when we talk to Mehdi Amini. I've mentioned a series of things this morning in the way of preliminary news stories, bombings triple in Afghanistan in 2006, according to Yahoo. Gary Kamiya of Salon has an important piece today entitled Can American Jews Unplug the Israel Lobby? The Daily Star of Lebanon, which is something that I try to check at least every other day, has a story whereby Moscow is denying that it gave Tehran a nuclear ultimatum, which is what the Iran press service had originally reported a couple of days ago. Yesterday's front page story in the Washington Post is quite disturbing. It's entitled Police Yield to Sunni Insurgents Ultimatum. As I mentioned before the first commercial break, Philip Giraldi of Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative has a very good piece at antiwar.com today entitled Picking on Halliburton. Karen Kwiatkowski, who of course occasionally appears on RBN, has a very important piece as well at antiwar.com entitled Our Mad Vice President Speaks, where Colonel Kwiatkowski is covering Dick Cheney's recent appearance before the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Gary North has a very good piece today at lewrockwell.com on the Federal Reserve Board. That one's entitled The Official Counterfeiter. And then there are a couple of other things that I think are well worth taking a look at least in passing today. Robert Fisk, the very, very important writer from the United Kingdom, has a piece in the British Independent today entitled U.S. Power Games in the Middle East. And specifically, Fisk centers on the whole subject of Lebanon. What are we doing there? Who are we backing there in Lebanon? What does it mean? And Fisk, obviously, when one goes through that piece, believes that U.S. policy in Lebanon is a complete disaster, as U.S. policy is generally in the Middle East, as far as Robert Fisk is concerned. And he always does an outstanding job, agree with him or not, at bringing his data to the fore with a very, very compelling analysis of why he feels the way that he does. I wanted then to take a look at something that AlJazeera.info has posted today. It's a particularly important piece because we had this gentleman's wife on this show some days ago. If you remember Nayla Al-Aryan, she is the wife of Dr. Sami Al-Aryan, who was the former University of South Florida computer science professor, who basically has been in U.S. custody for the last several years now. He's currently at a federal detention center in the Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina area. The long and the short of it is that in December of 2005, he was not convicted on a single count that was brought against him by the U.S. government in what was considered at the time to be a test case for prosecuting people under the so-called USA Patriot Act. There were, I think, 17 charges against Al-Aryan. And of those 17, he was acquitted on, I'm going to say, 8, maybe 9 of those charges. The jury was deadlocked on the other ones. And in terms of getting to the bottom of the deadlocked vote on the other counts, it becomes abundantly clear when we study that case and talk to people who were directly involved in it that the vast percentage of people on the jury wanted all of the other charges dropped as well. But suffice it to say that in the time that he has been in federal detention, he now has had a hunger strike going on that has been going on approximately 58 days now. And this is a situation that, as you read the most recent report on his circumstance, suggests that he is quite near death. The title of this piece at AlJazeera.info today is a repost of something from the so-called Al-Awada Palestine Right to Return Coalition. It is a so-called plea from that organization to save Dr. Al-Aryan's life. And it begins as follows. Friends, Dr. Sami Al-Aryan is about to die at the hands of the U.S. government. His situation has been blacked out by the media since his acquittal by a Florida jury of terrorist acts more than a year and a half ago. He has never been released from custody. Then the U.S. government promised that he would be released and allowed to return to Palestine with his family. Since that time, the government has thrown ridiculous demands at him regarding unrelated grand jury questions which he has refused to answer. Each refusal, as you are aware, results in more prison time. 58 days ago, Dr. Al-Aryan began a water-only fast. He has diabetes. His body functions are beginning to shut down. We are demanding that the U.S. government releases him before he dies in prison. The person who signs this on behalf of the so-called Al-Awada Palestine Right to Return Coalition is someone named Rhoda Shapiro, and she has in capital letters here, please send this appeal far and wide to everyone you know, to every organization with a mailing list, and to your local media. She then posts an action alert from the previous day, which March 20th, which explains in detail some of the circumstances that surround Dr. Al-Aryan's incarceration. And there is a reminder there that his wife, Nayla, has given interviews in recent times to several radio shows, including this one at the Republic Broadcasting Network. And at the bottom of this action alert, there is a listing of the most significant American officials to contact, including the Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez. And it goes down from there to list five or six of the most significant people that one can write or call in regard to this situation. I think that this is an important story, one that we need to keep an eye on in the days ahead. And again, this is a plea by the Al-Awada Palestine Right to Return Coalition to stop Dr. Sami Al-Aryan's death. And one can find the original post, or the post of the original post, I should say, at Hassan El Najjar's aljazeera.info, which is an American site that is based in Dalton, Georgia, in the United States. That's aljazeera.info. And look at their posted notice today on this, again, under the title, Stop Dr. Sami Al-Aryan's Death. This is the most interesting case, as, of course, we mentioned at the time when we had Dr. Al-Aryan's wife on this show, because we're not simply dealing with the whole issue of the USA Patriot Act from the vantage point of being directed against people of Middle Eastern origins who happen to be living in the United States, either as citizens or as legal foreign residents. But it also cuts at the heart of the arguments that surround the USA Patriot Act when it comes to its potential to be used against any American citizen, however far removed he or she may be from this entire Middle Eastern controversy. And it seems to me that the whole question of this test case is a very, very fascinating one and a very, very disturbing one, because you have a circumstance where this gentleman has been tried in an American court. He has been found guilty of absolutely nothing and yet has remained in ongoing detention since. Could it happen to you? Could it happen to me? Could it happen to anyone within the continental United States, no matter how safe and secure and how bland their background might happen to be? I think that that is the larger implication of this case, because if this sort of thing is allowed to stand at this particular time, then obviously we could see and undoubtedly would see an expansion of the application of this USA Patriot Act, both the first version and the second one, to a whole host of other situations that involve political dissidents of various types and descriptions who are not violent, who are not criminals, who have a serious beef with the direction that things are going in, both abroad and domestically, and who could at a future time be subjected to something of this ilk that could destroy their lives as well as those of their family members and friends. So this is an important story with implications for every American. And it seems to me that our failure to understand all of the implications of this case now may result in a larger tragedy ahead, not simply potentially in this man's death, but we could be seeing the final death knell to the American Republic if the suspension of habeas corpus is allowed to pass muster and to stand without so much as a whimper from the American people or the American news media or the situation up on Capitol Hill. Keep an eye on that story, folks. It's hard to imagine that something like this could be going on in the United States, but here we have it, and it behooves us to keep an eye on this story and to report it to you, because clearly you're not going to see it in corporate media, which again brings us full circle to the whole question of the Republic Broadcasting Network and the American Free Press, just to name two organs of opinion, one electronic, the other print, that are involved in trying to go around a tightly controlled corporate American media that clearly has as its aim an entrance on the part of this country into something called the New World Order. And that New World Order is about all kinds of things, but particularly it involves, in my view, the economic and political control, present and future, of every American living within the continental United States who believes that his or her government is operating under the auspices of the Constitution, when there's plenty of corroborative evidence out there that that simply is not the case. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Available from the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Now you have the time to review every spoken word
on any RBN program
by ordering CDs of any broadcast in either standard audio or MP3 format. Audio CDs are just $10 per hour.
$15 for 2 hours.
And $7 when you order 3 or more hours. An entire month of your favorite broadcaster in MP3 format for just $20. So order right, Republic Broadcasting. 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. That address again is Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or for more information, call 1-800-724-2719.
And on the web at rbnlive.com.
Order your CDs today because you can handle the truth.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
Mark Dancross, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our guest at around 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, will be Mehdi Amini of United Republicans of Iran for a Democratic and Secular Republic. You can find the English language blog of this outfit at iranrepublic.org. I know next to nothing about the United Republicans of Iran, which is precisely why I want to delve into this subject with Mehdi Amini this morning, to find out more about it and what it is and what it claims in regard to the situation in Iran, what it believes is the best thing for Iran's future, and to what extent this organization has links to other key players in the political scene and political arena as it relates to both Iran and the Middle East. So that will be Mehdi Amini on at 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, at iranrepublic.org. Friday, I'm going to have Gary Brummett on this show. Gary is a survivor of the USS Liberty catastrophe in 1967, where Israel attacked the USS Liberty during the Six-Day War. And Gary Brummett was an eyewitness to those things and is going to come on Friday to discuss his experience and what he thinks it means, and all the things that he has lived with in the 40 years since that time, Gary has also put me on to someone here in San Antonio who survived that attack, who will also be on the show at a later juncture. But suffice it to say that we've talked or have made reference on a number of occasions to the tragedy of the USS Liberty and its having been attacked by the Israelis in June of 1967. Gary Brummett, as well as a whole host of other people who were aboard the USS Liberty that day, believe that they were deliberately attacked. He will explain why, and even beyond that question, we will be once again talking about the whole question of the role of the Israeli lobby and the Israeli government and the American political scene, both domestically and in foreign policy, and why it could possibly be that the United States government at the time and in all the years since has systematically covered up what happened in June of 1967 when Israel attacked the USS Liberty. And Gary Brummett was saying to me yesterday that a particular person in San Antonio who was on the USS Liberty that day and was a very significant person not only at the time but thereafter in regard to their service to the government of the United States had their own testimony censored from the official record in regard to this attack and what this second person saw in regard to what took place in June of 1967. I think that'll be a very fascinating show on Friday because, again, I have read about this case. I am not as well informed on it as maybe some people at RBN, but suffice it to say that being able to bring on an eyewitness to the entire affair and to have this person share their life's situation with us is a special privilege, and we'll be taking a look at that whole case on Friday with Gary Brummett, the USS Liberty. What happened in June of 1967, not only with the attack, but the aftermath of the attack. This then gets into a very curious issue, and that issue is corporate media once again. If you happen to see yesterday's Wall Street Journal on the front page, there was a post there by a gentleman by the name of Jay Solomon. It has a Beirut, Lebanon byline, and the title of the article is How Beirut Police Fingered Syria in the Hariri assassination, talking about the assassination of the late Prime Minister of Lebanon, Rafik Hariri. And despite leads, going back to the subtitle of this Wall Street Journal piece yesterday by Jay Solomon, despite leads, probe is hindered by threats. UN tribunal is urged. Nonetheless, as you read through this entire account that Jay Solomon gives us in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, all of the evidence that the Wall Street Journal talks about, so-called evidence, points to Syria in regard to the Rafik Hariri assassination, when there is a whole body of opinion in the international community that the evidence points not to Syria, but to Israel. Who's telling the truth on this? Why this incredible discrepancy between the two different versions of who and what was behind the Rafik Hariri assassination, as well as several other political assassinations in Lebanon in recent times? I would like to find someone who is a legitimate, respected expert on this whole question of the Rafik Hariri assassination to come on this show to give us their take on what we might decipher from these various news reports, where on the one hand, the Wall Street Journal in the United States seems to be suggesting that all the available evidence points to Damascus, where a lot of other folks around the world who have looked at this case believe that the evidence points to Tel Aviv. We'll see what happens with that in the days ahead, but suffice it to say that we could be seeing, both in this situation with these stories on the Rafik Hariri assassination, as well as a whole host of other things, a spin, an Orwellian spin on these events in the American corporate media that could be a part of a larger plot and a larger design. Let's hope that that's wrong, but I'm very suspicious about the whole thing, particularly as there are some folks out there like Dick Cheney in his most recent remarks to the American Israel Public Action or Political Affairs Committee that seem to indicate that they would like to see a wider war in the Middle East. We'll be back. This is Mark Gankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas. Stay tuned.
Thank you. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hi, this is John Statman, and I want to tell you about a new shortwave receiver that we're really excited about. It's the Kato KA1103, and let me tell you, this radio has features and performance of receivers costing 2 to 3 times the price. Features include dual conversion phase lock loop tuner for continuous coverage of the entire shortwave band, AM, FM, and medium bands, 268 memory presets, single sideband reception with fine tuning control, signal strength, meter, battery, power indicator, DX local select, tone select, auto backlight screen, extra long telescopic antenna, line out and external line in jacks, and many other features too long to list. And when you purchase a Kato KA1103, you just don't get a radio, you get an entire radio package, including an external antenna, stereo earbuds, and an AC adapter, rechargeable batteries, and a nice carry pouch. So if you've been considering buying a shortwave receiver or would like to upgrade from your present radio, the KA1103 at just $110 plus $9 shipping is an outstanding value. Call us at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
Back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be joined at shortly after 8 o'clock this morning Central Standard Time by Mehdi Amini of the United Republicans of Iran for a Democratic and Secular Republic. What is it? Who's behind it? What is its aim, its goal, or series of goals? We'll try to find out more at 8 o'clock this morning. I know very little about this organization. I have seen some of their news releases. So this is an exploratory thing for me as well as for the listeners. You can find this gentleman's website at iranrepublic.org. That's iranrepublic.org. And he is currently based in the United States. One can support the Republic Broadcasting Network, by the way. I wanted you to be aware of the fact that there are a couple of things that are on the table today in regard to our situation. We are in the process of getting our archives back up online, and when that happens, they will be far more user-friendly than they have ever been before, both for the hosts as well as the listeners. And at some future juncture when that happens, I will let you know. because it will be a repository of information not simply about Mark Dankoff's America, but also all of the other fine shows on the Republic Broadcasting Network, which you can find at republicbroadcasting.org. Again, the website is republicbroadcasting.org. And if you desire to make a gift to the Republic Broadcasting Network, that's the site to use to do that, republicbroadcasting.org, or give us a call at 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. You can have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism, for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling by using those same contact points, republicbroadcasting.org, or 1-800-724-2719. Again, that's 1-800-724-2719. There is a new website for the Republic Trading Group. You can now find that at republictradinggroup.net. That's republictradinggroup.net. If you're interested in making some investments that involve the Republic Trading Group, that's the place to go, republictradinggroup.net. And we'll be mentioning more about these contact points throughout the next couple of hours. Back to this whole question then of Lebanon, who and what is behind the Hariri assassination? That's a matter of incredibly divergent interpretation and opinion. The American corporate media insists in the main that the Syrians were behind this assassination of Rafiq Hariri, that all of the available evidence in their view points to Damascus. But in the Middle East, you find that there's a tremendous body of opinion that believes that the Israeli government was behind the killing of Rafiq Hariri and that the Israeli government was involved in this to continue destabilizing Lebanon for its own purposes, a destabilization that would then give Israel the pretext to expand its own borders northward, keeping in mind, again, that that's a very divergent set of camps in regard to who and what has been behind these recent assassinations in Lebanon in the last couple of years, especially the Hariri killing. It behooves us to watch this very, very closely, because as we start talking about Syria and Iran, it's painfully apparent that the neocons in this country want to attack both of these nations, or to give Israel the green light to attack these countries, and it may well be that they are searching for the perfect incident to justify that. And this whole business in Lebanon is something that we need to keep an eye on ongoingly. Robert Fisk then becomes very important in regard to what he has posted 2 days ago at the British Independent. It's entitled U.S. Power Games in the Middle East. As the West looks anxiously at Iraq and Afghanistan, dangerous cracks are opening up in Lebanon, and the White House is determined to prop up Fuad Sinoor's government. Bob Fisk goes on to say that the spring rain beat down like ball bearings in the flat roof of General Claudio Graziano's office. Much of southern Lebanon looked like a sea of mud this week, but all was optimism and light for the Italian commander of the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, now 11,000 strong and still expecting South Korea to add to his remarkable 29-nation international army. He didn't recall how the French battalion almost shot down an Israeli jet last year. It was before his time. And he dismissed last month's border shootout between Israeli and Lebanese troops. No specific threats have been directed at UNIFIL, the UN man's in southern Lebanon insisted, though I noticed he paused for several seconds before replying to my question. And his own force was now augmented by around 9,000 Lebanese troops patrolling on the Lebanese-Israeli frontier. There was some vague talk of terrorist threats associated with Al-Qaeda, quote-unquote. UN generals rarely use the word terrorism, but then again, Graziano was also a NATO general. Yet there's no hard information on this. Yes, Lebanese army intelligence was keeping him up to date, so it must have come as a shock to the good general when the Lebanese Interior Minister Hassan Sabeh last week announced that a Lebanese Internal Security Force unit had arrested four Syrian members of a Palestinian terrorist group, quote-unquote, linked to Al-Qaeda and working for the Syrian intelligence services, who were said to be responsible for leaving bombs in two Lebanese minibuses on the 13th of February, killing three civilians and wounding another 20. Now, it has to be said that there's a lot of skepticism about this story, not because Syria has inevitably denied any connection to Lebanese bombings, But because in a country that has never in 30 years solved a political murder, it's pretty remarkable that the local Lebanese constabulary can solve this one. And very conveniently so, since Mr. Sobez's pro-American government continues to accuse Syria of all things bestial in the state of Lebanon. According to the Lebanese government, one of those anonymous sources so beloved of the press, the arrested men were also planning attacks on UNIFIL and had maps of the UN's military patrol routes in the south of the country. And a drive along the frontier with Israel shows that the UN is taking no chances. Miles of razor wire and 20-foot concrete walls protect many of its units. The Italians, like their French counterparts, have created little green zones, quote-unquote. We Westerners seem to be doing that all over the Middle East, where a carabinieri police officers want photo identity cards for even the humblest of reporters. These are combat units complete with their own armor and tanks, although no one could explain to me this week in what circumstances the tanks could possibly be used, and I rather suspect they don't know. Surely they won't fire at the Israelis, and unless they want to go to war with the Hezbollah, I cannot imagine French Leclerc tanks are going to be shooting at the Middle East's most disciplined guerrilla fighters. But UNIFIL, like it or not, is on only one side of the border, the Lebanese side, and despite their improving relations with the local Shia population, the UN boys are going in for cash handouts to improve water supplies and roads, quick impact projects, as they are called, in the awful UN speak of southern Lebanon. There are few Lebanese who do not see them as a buffer force to protect Israel. Last year's UN Resolution 1701 doesn't say this, but it does call for the, quote, disarmament of all armed groups in Lebanon, unquote. This was a clause, of course, which met with the enthusiastic approval of the United States. For armed groups, quote unquote, read Hezbollah. The reality is that Washington is now much more deeply involved in Lebanon's affairs than most people, even the Lebanese, realize. Indeed, there is a danger that, confronted by its disastrous democratic experiment in Iraq, the U.S. government is now turning to Lebanon to prove its ability to spread democracy in the Middle East. Needless to say, the Americans and the British have been generous in supplying the Lebanese army with new equipment, jeeps and Humvees, and anti-riot gear. To be used against who, I wonder? And there was even a hastily denied report that Defense Minister Michael Muir would be picking up some missile-firing helicopters after his recent visit to Washington. Who, one also asks oneself, were these mythical missiles supposed to be fired at? Every Lebanese potentate, it now seems, is headed for Washington. Wally Jumblatt, the wittiest, most nihilistic, and in many ways the most intelligent, is also among the most infamous. He was deprived of his U.S. visa until 2005 for uncharitably saying that he wished a mortar shell fired by Iraqi insurgents into the Baghdad Green Zone had killed them. Had killed then-Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz. But fear not. Now that poor old Lebanon is to become the latest star of U.S. foreign policy, Jumblatt sailed into Washington for a 35-minute meeting with President George Bush. That's only 10 minutes less than Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert got, and has also met with Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, Defense Secretary Gates, and the somewhat more disturbing Stephen Hadley, America's National Security Advisor. There are Lebanese admirers of Jumblatt who have been asking themselves of his recent tirades against Syria and the Lebanese government's Hezbollah opponents, not to mention his meetings in Washington, aren't risking another fresh grave in Lebanon's expanding cemeteries. Brave man Jumblatt is. Whether he's a wise man will be left to history. But it is America's support for Fuad Sinoor's government, and Jumblatt is a foundation stone of this, that is worrying many Lebanese. With Shia out of the government of their own volition, Sinoor's administration may well be, as the pro-Syrian president Emil Lahoud says, unconstitutional, and the sectarian nature of Lebanese politics came violently to life in January with stonings and shooting battles on the streets of Beirut. Because Iraq and Afghanistan have captured the West's obsessive attention since then, however, there is a tendency to ignore the continuing dangerous signs of confessionalism in Lebanon. In the largely Sunni Beirut suburb of Tarak al-Jadadi, several Shiite families have left for unscheduled holidays, quote-unquote. Many Sunnis will no longer shop in the cheaper department stores in the largely Shia southern suburb of Dahiya. More seriously, The Lebanese security forces have been sent into the Armenian Christian town of Anjar in the Bekaa Valley after a clump of leaflets was found at one end of the town calling on its inhabitants to, quote, leave Muslim land, unquote. Needless to say, there have been no reports of this frightening development in the Lebanese press. Anjar was in fact given by the French to the Armenians after they were forced to leave the city of Alexandretta in 1939. The French allowed a phony referendum there to let the Turks take over in the vain hope that Ankara would fight Hitler, and Anjar's citizens hold their title deeds. But receiving threats that they are going to be ethnically cleansed from their homes is, for Armenians, a terrible reminder of their genocide at the hands of the Turks in 1915. Lebanon likes its industrious, highly educated Armenians who are also represented in parliament, but that such hatred could now touch them is a distressing witness to the fragility of the Lebanese state. True, Saad Hariri, the Sunni son of the murdered ex-Prime Minister Rafik Hariri, has been holding talks with the Shia Speaker of Parliament, Nabi Berri, the Malvolio of Lebanese politics, and the Saudis have been talking to the Iranians and the Syrians about a solution to the Lebanese crisis. Sianora, who was appointed to his job, not elected, seems quite prepared to broaden Shia representation in his cabinet, but not at the cost of providing them with a veto over his decisions. One of these decisions is Sianora's insistence that the UN goes ahead with its international tribunal into Hariri's murder, which the government and the United States believe was serious work. Yet cracks are appearing. France now has no objections to direct talks with Damascus, and Javier Solana has been to plead with President Bashar Assad for Syria's help in reaching, quote, peace, stability, and independence, unquote, for Lebanon. What price the UN tribunal if Syria agrees to help? Already Assad's ministers are saying that if Syrian citizens are found to be implicated in Hariri's murder, then they will have to be tried by a Syrian court, something which would not commend itself to the Lebanese or to the Sianora, meanwhile, can now bask in the fact that after the U.S. administration asked Congress to approve $770 million for the Beirut government to meet its Paris III donor conference pledges, that Lebanon will be the third largest recipient of U.S. aid per capita of population. How much of this will have to be spent on the Lebanese military, we still don't know. Sianora, by the way, was also banned from the United States for giving a small sum to an Islamic charity during a visit several years ago to a Beirut gathering hosted by Syed Hussein Fadlallah, whom the CIA tried to murder in 1985 for his supposed links to the Hezbollah. Now he's an American hero, which is all to Hezbollah's liking, however faithful its leader Syed Hassan Nasrallah may be to Iran or Syria. The more Sianora's majority government is seen to be propped up by America, the deeper the social and political divisions in Lebanon become. The tink tank lads, as I call them, quote-unquote, can fantasize about America's opportunities. Quote, international support for the Lebanese government will do a great deal for advancing the cause of democracy and helping avoid civil war, unquote, David Schenker of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy pronounced last week. Quote, the Bush administration is wisely determined not to abandon the Lebanese to the tender mercies of Iran and Syria, which represents an important development toward ensuring the government's success, he said. I wouldn't be too sure about that. Wherever Washington has supported Middle East democracy, quote-unquote, recently, although it swiftly ditched Lebanon during its blood-soaked war last summer on the ridiculous assumption that by postponing a ceasefire the Israelis could crush the Hezbollah, its efforts have turned into a nightmare. Now, we know that Israeli Prime Minister Olmert had already pre-planned a war with Lebanon if his soldiers were captured by the Hezbollah. Nasrallah is able to hold up his guerrilla army as defenders of Lebanon rather than provokers of a conflict which cost at least 1,300 Lebanese civilian lives. And going all the way to Washington to save Lebanon is an odd way of behaving. The answers lie here, not in the United States. As a friend put it to me, quote, if I had a bad toothache, I don't book myself into a Boston clinic and fly across the Atlantic. I go to my Beirut dentist, unquote. It's Bob Fisk today for the Independent, talking about U.S. power games in the Middle East, where the United States is clearly tying its situation and its fortunes to the Fawad Sianora regime there in Lebanon. What is, by the way, this Washington Institute for Near East Policy, WINEP, that Fisk mentions in his article? Check out the Washington Institute for Near East Policy in relation to its connections to the government of Israel and the Israeli lobby, and I suspect that that will even be further corroboration for Fisk's concern that the United States is involving itself in this situation in Lebanon in a dangerous way that is not widely understood by most people either in this country or elsewhere, and that it could well go south in the same way that our situation in Iraq and Afghanistan have. Talking, by the way, about Afghanistan, Yahoo reports today that bombings have tripled in that country since 2006. Yahoo is posting a London byline of the French AFP news service, saying that bomb attacks in Afghanistan rose threefold between 2005 and 2006. According to Armed Forces Minister Adam Ingram, attacks using improvised explosive devices, or IEDs, rose from about 500 in 2005 to 1,525 last year. What's going on in Lebanon? What's going on in Iraq? What's going on in Afghanistan? What is about to happen in Iran? Stay tuned to Mark Dankoff's America, folks, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Is a third world war close by? We'll be back.
The Republic Broadcasting Network is very proud to present a new educational tool that will inform and update our listeners to the most critically important topics and issues of the day. This new 50 CD collection contains invaluable information, carefully selected from the very best shows in the RBN archives. These standard format CDs have been painstakingly edited to remove all commercials and unrelated topic content. Each CD has been divided into multiple tracks for ease of use and review in any standard CD player. Each CD targets a specific subject matter. For example, Agenda 21, vaccinations, 9/11, depleted uranium, the war in Iraq, fluoride, deception in the churches, genetically modified foods, animal RFID tags, and many more topics. We encourage you to make copies and get them out to as many people as you can. Call and order your library CDs for the price of $150, 800-724-2719, or go to the website rbnlive.com.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
It ain't no joke. I like to buy the world a token. and teach the world to snuff the fires and the liars. Hey, I know it's just a song, but it's fast for the recipe. This is a love attack.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We hope to be joined this morning just after 8 o'clock Central Standard Time by Mehdi Amini of the United Republicans of Iran for a Democratic and a Secular Republic. You can find the English language version of that site at iranrepublic.org. And it'll be interesting to talk to this gentleman about this group and about who and what they are and what they're trying to do in Iran and in the Middle East. I am not familiar with these folks except for having read some of their news releases, so I hope to ask the right questions this morning in regard to having your understanding and mine broadened in regard to this particular Iranian expatriate group as we try to see who all of the major players are in a region of the world that seems to be further enveloping the United States in trouble with a capital T. By the way, in regard to this whole business of the Wall Street Journal's take yesterday on the Hariri assassination in Lebanon, I think it's important that we go back to what Dr. Abbas Bakhtiar had to say a couple of days ago in AlJazeera.info. You may remember that Dr. Bakhtiar was on this show a week ago Monday, and if you're not familiar with Dr. Abbas Bakhtiar of Nordland University in Norway, you need to be, because I think he's an outstanding Middle Eastern analyst with a particular pulse on things going on not only in Iran, but also in Palestine. And Dr. Abbas Bakhtiar has a piece for Al Jazeera 2 days ago entitled, "Is it time for war or peace in the Middle East?" And the interesting thing is that when you're looking at both corporate media as well as the best of non-corporate, non-establishment media, it's helpful to read both of them and to put them down side by side. When you put them down side by side and begin to analyze the connections and the names and the associations, sometimes there's a frightening pattern that emerges. And in Dr. Abbas Bakhtiar's piece for Al Jazeera 2 days ago entitled, "Is it Time for War or Peace in the Middle East?" if you scroll down the page of that particular post, Dr. Bakhtiar reminds us again of the 6 pages of recommendations for Benjamin Netanyahu and the other neocons connected with the Israeli government that were being advanced by the position paper entitled "A Clean Break, A New Strategy for Securing the Realm." We talked about this before on this show, of course, that in 1996, the newly elected Prime Minister of Israel at that time, Benjamin Netanyahu, commissioned a study group that was entitled "The Study Group on a New Israeli Strategy Toward 2000. And that organization was to craft a strategy for Israel that was to be a long-term roadmap for their policies generally in the Middle East over a period of future decades. This Institute for Advanced Strategic and Political Studies included Richard Perle, James Colbert, Charles Fairbanks, Douglas Feith, Robert Loewenberg, David Wormser, and Mayrav Wormser, which created this clean break, a new strategy for securing the realm, as the Jewish neoconservative roadmap for the Middle East and for Palestine. And as Dr. Abbas Bakhtiar reminds us in his new piece for Al Jazeera, Lebanon plays a very prominent role in all of this, looking at specific points that he publishes from that paper. Compare that with what the Wall Street Journal is saying. Do we now see the connection? This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We hope to be joined shortly by Mehdi Amini of the United Republicans of Iran for a Democratic and Secular Republic. You can find that at iranrepublic.org in English, and we'll be back. Stay tuned.